Yeah, what's Universal Time? Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting. Kurdish forces claim victory against Islamic State in Syria. Kurdish forces in northern Syria have claimed full control of a border town believed to be an entry point from Turkey for Islamic State fighters and their supplies. Bolstered by U.S.-led airstrikes overnight, anti-IS militia raised their flags over Atal Bayad Tuesday, according to reporters observing from the Turkish side. Josh Earnest is a White House spokesman.
The progress that they have made, according to reports, indicates that they have cut ISIL's primary supply route to its self-proclaimed capital in Raqqa. We know that this could lead to a major disruption of ISIL's flow of foreign fighters, illicit goods, and other illegal activity into northern Syria and into Iraq.
An offensive to oust the militant group was launched last week aimed at shutting down a major road used to smuggle equipment and would-be militants from Turkey to the de facto IS capital of Raqqa. The Pentagon Tuesday said Tal Bayad remains contested, but anti-IS forces are, quote, on the verge of closing the border crossing. The expelled outgoing UN aid chief to South Sudan Tuesday warned a 250,000 children face starvation in the war-torn country, adding that an end to the 18-month conflict is nowhere in sight. Toby Lanzer said in half of South Sudan, one of every three children is acutely malnourished. He said fighting has involved the widespread burning of homes, destruction of schools and hospitals, as well as wholesale theft of livestock, water sources and other infrastructure. The UN estimates two-thirds of the country's 12 million people are in need of aid, with 4.5 million facing severe food insecurity. Meanwhile, Reuters reports UN-supplied helicopters are delivering supplies to thousands uprooted by recent fighting. This is VOA News. UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon says he's deeply concerned over Egypt's confirming of a death sentence against deposed President Mohamed Morsi and more than 90 others in connection with the 2011 mass prison break. The United States said it was deeply troubled by the sentences. An Egyptian court Tuesday confirmed the death sentence of former President Morsi, originally sentenced last month along with 100 others. Regional analyst Stephen Zonas was asked if he believes the sentence will be carried out.
The Egyptian regime would really be overreaching if they actually went ahead with these executions. As unpopular as the Muslim Brotherhood and President Morsi was among Egyptians and elsewhere, these are clearly excessive sentences, quite dubious in terms of their legality, and it would only isolate Egypt in world public opinion, not to mention encourage the more radical elements of the Islamist opposition.
Since his 2013 ouster, led by then Army Chief and current President Abdel Fattah el-Sisi, the Egyptian government has brought multiple charges against Mr. Morsi and the leaders of his banned Muslim Brotherhood amid a massive crackdown against the group. Secretary of State John Kerry Tuesday said the U.S. is not focused on Iran's past nuclear activities as it works to meet a June 30 deadline for a nuclear agreement with Tehran.
We're not fixated on Iran specifically accounting for what they did at one point in time or another. We know what they did. We have no doubt. We have absolute knowledge with respect to the certain military activities they were engaged in. What we're concerned about is going forward. It's critical to us to know that going forward, those activities have been stopped and that we can account for that in a legitimate way.
Iran is resisting demands inspectors be allowed to visit military sites as part of a nuclear agreement. Mr. Kerry said access is critical to a deal. Zimbabwe's central bank has begun the process of demonetizing the Zimbabwean dollar and collecting old notes from the public. The dollar, ravaged by hyperinflation, ceased to be legal tender last Friday as the country switched to the U.S. dollar. Christopher Mugaga is CEO of the Zimbabwe Chamber of Commerce.
A lot of people were quite very aggrieved as they felt they'd lost a lot of money after we had converted in February of 2009 into U.S. dollar terms. So as a Chamber of Commerce, we believe this could be a right move.
Economic decline led to the collapse of the Zimbabwean currency in the last decade. It finally had to be abandoned in favor of the U.S. dollar and the South African rand. In Tunisia, at least 18 people were killed when a passenger train smashed into a semi-trailer truck that was trying to race the train to cross the tracks early Tuesday in Fars, southwest of Tunis. Dozens were injured. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today's Wednesday, June 17th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon is concerned about death sentences for former Egyptian President Morsi and others.
These death sentences, I don't think they will be commuted, but I don't think they will be carried out. Sisi understands that international public opinion will not support his execution.
That's political scientist Hilal Kashan of the American University of Beirut. European Union ministers are divided over redistribution of thousands of migrants who have crossed the Mediterranean. Cameroon is worried about the spread of Islamic State ideology, and Burundi's opposition groups welcome African Union recommendations.
The members of opposition we've been talking with, they are all agree with this call from African Union about the postponement of the elections, about this military expert, about this human rights observers, even about the dialogue.
Innocent Muhoozi is the general manager of the Independent Renaissance Radio of Burundi, and a panel recommends significant changes in global UN peacekeeping operations. The Stories Plus, Mark Oldman, Sports and our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. United Nations Secretary General Ban Ki-moon says he is deeply concerned by Egypt's confirmation of death sentences for deposed President Mohamed Morsi and more than 90 others in connection with a 2011 mass prison break. In a statement, Mr. Ban urged Egyptian authorities to ensure the defendants can benefit from due process and a fair trial. The United States also said it was deeply troubled by the sentences, which it described as politically motivated. Edward Uranian reports for VOA from Cairo.
Judge Shaban Shami read out the decision to uphold death sentences against half a dozen top Muslim Brotherhood leaders in a move that had been widely expected. The judge had sent the original verdicts to Egypt's Mufti, the country's top religious authority, for review. Those Muslim Brotherhood leaders on trial responded to the decision by chanting slogans against the court from inside the glass-enclosed defendant's cage. The men appeared to be smiling broadly and waving their fists in a four-finger salute to symbolize defiance of the ouster of former President Mohamed Morsi and a bloody military operation to evacuate a protest camp. The Muslim Brotherhood's website condemned the sentences, insisting they were aimed at the legitimacy of the January 2011 revolution and those who participated in it. It claimed Tuesday's sentences belong on the trash heap of history. Mr. Morsi, who was elected in Egypt's first democratic election in June 2012, was overthrown by the military a year later after large street protests against him. Tuesday's death sentence against the former Islamist president and his associates is expected to be appealed. Many analysts believe that death sentences against Mr. Morsi and his associates ultimately will not be carried out. American University of Beirut political scientist Hilal Kashan tells VOA he believes Egypt's leader Abdel Fattah al-Sisi will not be eager to go against the court of world opinion, which appears to oppose the execution of Mr. Morsi.
These death sentences, I don't think they will be commuted, but I don't think they will be carried out. Sisi understands that international public opinion will not support his execution.
Kashan says President Sisi may ultimately use these executions as a bargaining chip with his opponents to find a way out of the ongoing political impasse. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
Burundi's opposition and civil society groups said they welcome the decisions of the African Union to send military experts to Burundi to verify the process of disarming militia and other armed groups. During their just concluded summit in South Africa, African leaders also rejected Burundi President Pierre Nkurunziza's decision to hold presidential elections on July 15, in which he plans to run for a third term. The leaders also called for a dialogue between the government and opposition groups, Innocent Muhozi is the general manager of the Independent Renaissance Radio and Television Network in Burundi. He says the opposition groups agree with the African Union recommendations, but they are concerned the Burundian government continues to make unilateral decisions on the electoral process.
The members of opposition we've been talking with, they are all agree with this call from African Union about the postponement of the elections, about this military expert, about this human rights observers, and even about the dialogue. They totally agree with the call from African Union. But it seems like the sound is not the same from the government.
The African Union says any date should be decided based on consensus that will come out of negotiations between the government and all stakeholders. But that does not address whether President Pierre Nkurunziza is not going to run or he's going to run. So if they say they agree, what are they agreeing to?
They're agreeing to the principle of dialogue first, because if you say dialogue, in their understanding, this dialogue includes this question of third term of the President Nkurunziza. So it's not about saying clearly that African Union is not supposed to say he should not have the right to compete. But as long as they say they have to have dialogue on every topic that's supposed to divide the political people here, in the view of opposition, that includes this question of third term of President Nkurunziza.
The last time we spoke to the members of the opposition, and I spoke with you also, the opposition members were saying that they don't think that the decision made by the Electoral Commission or the president was legal because the Electoral Commission was not legally constituted. Now, on Tuesday, the Electoral Commission moved to appoint two new members to form a quorum. What is the opposition view on that?
The people from the opposition we've been talking to, they're all saying the same thing. How come they appoint new members of this electoral commission with no dialogue, with no consensus with the opposition? They don't recognize the legitimacy of this commission because it doesn't come from a consensus, it doesn't come from a dialogue. They say it represents just the government and the ruling party and not the opposition, not the whole political class in Burundi.
When you speak to President Nkurunziza's people, they say, why is it that they have to talk to the opposition about the elections? Because the opposition have said that they're not going to go to the elections. So why should they talk to you?
Okay, it's up to what the people in the government want. Because if people say you should dialogue, it's just to have another war in this country, because if this electoral process goes on like it seems to be today, just led by the government only, that means that the opposition will not participate in this process, because they say they have problems of security, they have problems of freedom of expression, they have problems of demonstration, they have a lot of problems. They are asking to dialogue about those questions. So that means if the process keep like it is today, it will be with only the ruling party competing with his friends, the political parties that are close to him. And this could lead to another civil war. That's why people are saying, please stop, let's dialogue. And after the dialogue, let's go to elections.
Innocent Muhozi is the general manager of the Independent Renaissance Radio and Television Network. He was speaking with me from the capital, Bujumbura. Following a meeting in Luxembourg, the European Union's 28 members remain sharply divided over plans to redistribute thousands of migrants who have crossed the Mediterranean. Italy, which receives many of the migrants, is threatening to take action if there is no breakthrough. Lisa Bryant reports for VOA from Paris.
As European Union interior ministers met over a controversial plan to allot migrant quotas to member states, the fallout could be seen on the border between Italy and France. French authorities refused to allow several dozen mostly African immigrants to cross over from Italy. At the end, many were bused to the nearby Italian town of Ventimiglia, where their long-term fate is unclear. Another standoff took place in Luxembourg, where the ministers wrapped up talks with no agreement on the migrant quotas. The European Commission, the EU's executive arm, wants to make the quotas mandatory. Not all EU members agree, and three countries, Britain, Denmark, and Ireland, are exempt from the quota plan. Migration Commissioner Dimitris Avramopoulos spoke to reporters after the meeting.
I'm pleased to see that member states agree on the principles, but you will agree with me that words are not enough. Now is the moment for action, for joint action. We should not waste any more time. We must rise to the occasion and deliver results.
Italian Prime Minister Matteo Renzi has reportedly threatened a Plan B, issuing temporary visas to migrants so they can travel outside Italy's borders in Europe's Schengen passport-free zone. Italy has been overwhelmed by the tens of thousands of migrants arriving on its shore this year. But standing alongside his Italian and German counterparts in Luxembourg, French Interior Minister Bernard Cazeneuve tried to present a more unified front. He said the three are trying to resolve a common problem together. He also said there is progress on resolving the Ventimiglia border standoff. Italy and Greece have received the majority of the more than 100,000 Mediterranean migrants who have arrived here this year. The quota plan would redistribute 40,000 of them to other EU states. Another plan would resettle about 20,000 Syrian refugees who live in camps in Jordan, Lebanon, and Turkey. EU leaders will be discussing another part of the migration plan, cracking down on smuggling rings, when they meet next week. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
Today's Wednesday, June 17th, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voices of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Daybreak Africa time is 16 and a half minutes past the hour. Cameroon has assembled all Muslim leaders in the country to teach them how to identify and denounce promoters of the Islamic State group's radical ideology. The effort comes amid reports supporters of the Nigerian terrorist group Boko Haram have dropped their weapons and are now preaching extremism. As Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Yaoundé, Boko Haram earlier this year announced its adherence to the Islamic State group.
Kavai Yege Jibril, Speaker of Cameroon's National Assembly, traditional ruler and Muslim spiritual guide, says Boko Haram fighters have dropped their guns and are now preaching Islamic State ideology.
Diminué certes, et même au bord de l'agonie, il n'en demeure pas moins que la secte islamiste Boko Haram.
He says the Boko Haram terrorist group, though in agony after joint forces attacked its strongholds, are now spreading a demonic religion that can lead to social unrest. He says he is calling on the Cameroonian people to be vigilant and is also warning whoever collaborates with Islamist State ideology that Cameroon is solidly one and indivisible. Yaoundé-based cleric Nuri Dini says many Cameroonians, especially unemployed youths, have been converted and now secretly share the extremist group's ideology.
Oh Allah, nous te prions et te demandons d'éradiquer le secte Boko Haram.
He says he is praying that God should help Cameroon eradicate the Boko Haram terrorist group and its ideology and establish peace, security and stability. He says God should open the eyes of people and give them wisdom to quickly detect the strategies being used by the enemies of progress, propagators of Islamic State ideology, who want to destroy Cameroon. In March this year, the Nigerian militants group swore allegiance to Islamic State, which claims a self-declared caliphate in parts of Iran and Syria. Sheikh Nsangu Mama of the Union of African Muslim Scholars, who together with Cameroon's Islamic Cultural Association organized the training to detect and denounce extremism, says the groups have been educating Muslims on how to identify people spreading Islamic State ideology.
The solution is to go back to these teachings, to understand them the way the Prophet understood them and the way he talked to them to his companions.
Cameroon has a history of interreligious tolerance and peaceful coexistence with other denominations. But Dr. Musa Umaru of the Islamic Cultural Association of Cameroon says people should be watchful over a psychological warfare dividing Cameroon's Islamic sects that promoters of extremism are using to further divide them. He says they have educated all Muslim leaders in Cameroon to take the message to their localities so that this year's period of Ramadan fasting should begin in peace and understanding. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
After an extensive review of United Nations peacekeeping operations, an independent panel is recommending significant changes to help the world body adapt to the rapidly evolving challenges it faces in some of the troubled spots around the world. As viewers, Margaret Bashir reports from the United Nations, this is the first major peacekeeping assessment in 15 years.
The United Nations has more than 120,000 military, police, and civilian peacekeepers in 16 missions across the globe. With no end in sight to many of the world's worst crises, this number is not likely to decrease anytime soon. The 16-member panel, appointed by the UN chief and chaired by former Timor-Leste President José Ramos Horta, worked for 7 months, looking at what the limits of peacekeeping are and what expectations should be going forward. The panel handed the report to UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon on Tuesday morning, but it was not publicly released. Mr. Ramos Horta spoke to reporters about its contents. He stressed that clear political goals must guide all UN peacekeeping operations.
Peace is not achieved nor sustained by military or technical engagements alone, but often solutions can be found only through patient, steady political engagement.
He warned that UN missions are increasingly deployed in volatile and dangerous environments with little or no peace to keep and have frequently been used in the absence of a peace process. He said the panel recommends that missions should always deploy as part of a wider political process in which the UN plays the lead or leading role. Ramos Horta also called for faster deployment of missions. With no standing army of its own, it currently takes the UN about 9 months to recruit and deploy peacekeepers.
We call for a modest UN capacity to respond quickly to a crisis. For the UN to be able to react faster, there has to be discussions about a stronger network of first responding bridging forces from regions or individual
members. As the reach of terrorist groups spreads, blue helmets, as the UN troops are known, have been caught in the middle, such as in the Golan Heights, where armed groups fighting in the Syrian conflict have abducted and attacked them, or in Mali, where they have been targeted by terrorist groups, including Al-Qaeda in the Islamic Maghreb, in the course of protecting civilians. Sexual abuse and exploitation by peacekeepers of the people they are sent to protect has been one of the biggest stains on the United Nations. An internal report released this week said that while allegations are decreasing overall, they continue to persist. Ramos Horta said the UN zero tolerance policy must mean exactly that, and that immunity must never mean impunity for such acts. Margaret Bashir, VOA News, the United Nations.
Zimbabwe President Robert Mugabe is leaving an indelible stamp on the African Union as he serves as its rotating chairman. He showed that yet again at the end of the continental body's just concluded 25th summit in South Africa. In one rambling hour-long sentence, Mr. Mugabe spoke about everything from raising cattle as a child to his feelings about journalists and his sentiments about women's place in society. Viewers Anita Powell, who has covered Mr. Mugabe at three previous AU summits, looks at the interesting legacy he's leaving on African politics.
Robert Mugabe can always be relied on to say something interesting, especially at the twice-yearly summits held by the African Union. This year, he was free with his thoughts on the summit's biggest issues. They included women's empowerment, the political crisis in Burundi, and the controversy over African nations' membership in the International Criminal Court, which he has long disagreed with. Mr. Mugabe began his rhetorical tour de force with a bang at the summit's opening ceremony, hitting the women's empowerment theme by launching into a lengthy treatise on how all human beings have mothers. He has previously said he does not think women can be equal to men. But despite the rhetoric, his feelings on women are less than straightforward.
By way of election, they don't fare well, and people will want numbers in parliament. Then, of course, there is the issue of the husbands also. They may not want their wives to stand in parliament and leave them at home, but affirmative action, I think, is necessary.
That drew a sidelong glance from the seasoned politician sitting next to him, AU Chairman Nkosazana Dlamini-Zuma. Mr. Mugabe then spoke about his well-known contempt for the International Criminal Court That issue was vaulted into the spotlight at this summit when Sudanese President Omar al-Bashir defied an arrest warrant from the court to travel to South Africa, which would have been obliged as a court member to arrest him. Mr. Mugabe also poked fun at the current political crisis gripping Central Africa, the insistence of Burundi's President Pierre Nkurunziza to run for a third term, rationalizing that that will only count as his second term because Parliament chose him the first time. Mr. Mugabe himself has ruled his nation since 1980. Some critics of Zimbabwe's leader say he is not on top of his game, and that at the age of 91, he should finally retire. But Mr. Mugabe, who struggled to not fall asleep mid-sentence during his 1 a.m. soliloquy at the end of the summit, was quick to dispute that and blamed journalists for depicting him negatively.
Your pens are quite dangerous. The other day, I think we were having a press conference like this one. And as I was going down the steps, I missed the last step and fell. Oh, ho, ho, ho. It was international news. As I say, I used to fall many times looking after cattle, my grandfather's cattle, and so on in the bush. You'd knock against, you know, stones and things like that and fall, and you get up again and run. But oh, it's the whole president of Mugabe. Now, you see, we have said this man is now useless. He's lost. He's too old now. That's why he must resign.
As he made his exit from the stage, he paused, hovering a foot tantalizingly over the stairs. Do you want me to fall here? He asked the gathered media swarm. He did not. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
Time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. Here is Marco Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Very good Wednesday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak African sports news, we begin with football. Second half goals scored by Abudi Ongwene and Ngono Mani saw Cameroon come from behind to edge Switzerland 2-1 at the FIFA Women's World Cup in Edmonton, Canada on Tuesday. Consequently, Cameroon joined defending champions Japan in qualifying from Group C for the knockout stage of the contest. Elsewhere in New Zealand, Mali faced Brazil in Christchurch as a tournament debutants Senegal challenged Serbia in the semifinals at the men's FIFA Under-20 World Cup today, Wednesday. Turning to volleyball, hosts and defending champions Kenya play Cameroon as the vastly improved Senegal challenge Algeria in the semifinals at the Africa Women's Nations Volleyball Championships in Nairobi today, Wednesday. In classification ties, Botswana play Morocco as Tunisia engage Mauritius. In athletics, Lisa Labiche of the Seychelles cleared the bar at 1.91 meters to win the women's high jump at the Southern Africa Senior Athletics Championships in Redouit, Mauritius over the weekend. Lianame Maotoanong clocked 46.11 seconds to lead Zakaria Kamberuka and Karabo Sibanda in a 1-2-3 Botswana victory in men's 400 meters. Namibian Daniel Ngipendula clinched the gold medals in the 800 meters and 1500 meters as Sibusiso Matsenjwa won the 200 meters to give Swaziland their only medal of the championships. On the infield, Patience Nchingela leaped to a distance of 13.20 meters to lead Zinzi Chabangu and Matsi Dikotla in a 1-2-3 South African triumph in women's triple jump. Staying in Mauritius, South Africa topped the medal table with 14 gold, 9 silver and 4 bronze medals. They are followed by Botswana, Namibia, Mauritius, Seychelles, Swaziland and Zimbabwe. In Nigeria, Nicholas Imhoa Peramhe won men's 100 meters in 10.23 seconds at the Athletics Federation of Nigeria Golden League meet at the new Rojeni Stadium in Onitsha, Anambra State in southeast Nigeria. Orukpe Erayokan and Adeloye Oluwatosin prevailed in men's and women's 400 meters in 46.28 seconds and 52.72 seconds, respectively. Chinazom Amadi won women's long jump in 6.05 meters as Okpara Tedas prevailed in men's high jump with a clearance of 2.05 meters. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. And that's it for this Wednesday, June 17th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I'm James Botti in Washington saying, have a lovely day, Africa.
On Africa News Tonight, we let the sound tell the story, putting you in the middle of events from Africa's news to world crises. Africa News Tonight comes to you live from the Voice of America on the following shortwave frequencies, 6080 kilohertz and 15580 kilohertz, We are also live on the internet at www.voaafrica.com.